This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPM LP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm Vanessa Lowe.
And I'm Samantha Roll. In the next half hour, we'll hear stories from our community news reporters about a group that brings women together to align their money with their values, the status of a project that would cap part of the Vine Street Expressway, stitching together two parts of Chinatown that have been divided for decades, and a local cemetery that offers environmentally friendly burial options.
But first, as the Trump administration continues to ramp up efforts to detain and deport undocumented immigrants, some city, county, and state governments have adopted sanctuary policies that block local law enforcement from cooperating with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. Here in Philadelphia, another group has also played a role in providing sanctuary for immigrants, churches and other religious organizations. Block by Block reporter Kalisa Hamid has more.
There's a common saying in organizing and activist spaces, we keep us safe. And it is this saying that drives the core of the New Sanctuary Movement. The New Sanctuary Movement is an interfaith campaign between religious congregations across the country, aiming to not only provide physical sanctuary for migrant and refugee families, but to also organize communal efforts around Know Your Rights campaigns, direct actions at courthouses, and raising money towards legal support for undocumented immigrants. Last month, I had the pleasure of participating in an open mic fundraiser where all proceeds from the night went directly to the New Sanctuary Movement of Philadelphia.
Feed the hungry, club the poor, don't sound hard. People in towers of gold, my children starve.
The New Sanctuary Movement of Philadelphia, located in Kensington, organizes allies into focused committees targeted towards specific action items and fundraising goals for migrant families in the city. At the historic Mennonite House in Germantown, performers sang, recited poetry, and even told stories of their own involvement in protecting neighbors and vulnerable communities.
Empire soon fall, empire sicker than tall.
During intermission, I had a chance to chat with Jay Bergen, the pastor of Germantown Mennonite Church. As the oldest Mennonite church in America, founded in 1683, Jay gave some insight into how the Mennonite church found its place in the fight for immigrant justice.
We began as a congregation of immigrants, as a congregation of people who were fleeing religious persecution in Europe and who were seeking a place where we could practice our commitments to nonviolence, our commitments to free choice in religion and safety. And so from the very beginning, we've been a community of people who really believe in the sacred values of hospitality, freedom of religion, and of nonviolence.
In America, the church has long been the battleground on which racialized denominations have fought hard both for and against human and civil rights. Whereas religious congregations in the original sanctuary movement of the 1980s focused on the physical sanctuary of political refugees from Central America, the New Sanctuary Movement hangs its hat on broadening what safety looks like when local communities are committed to supporting neighbors from abroad.
In the last 15, 20 years, there's been a return to some of those practices, to using public declarations of sanctuary, not just for political refugees, but to say that everyone has a right to be here. That, you know, especially if we're going to be having the free movement of capital and the free trade of goods, human beings also get to move and get to be free. The government doesn't get to use the power of deportation to further crush marginalized communities, especially poor communities, and threaten to tear families apart. Under the second Trump administration, they've made it very clear that they are willing to go into places of worship, to schools, to hospitals, other places. And so folks who are under threat of deportation, right now, by and large, they have decided that it is not strategic and it's not actually smart act of faith to seek public sanctuary. So there are, you know, unofficial networks all over the country of people who are protecting their neighbors, protecting their family members, what we would call private sanctuary. But, you know, as a church and as a part of New Sanctuary Movement, what we want to do is create the conditions for this to really be actually a sanctuary city, not in name, but in practice. You shouldn't have to go live in our church basement for several years in order to be safe. You should be able to go to work and go to school and live your life. So we're trying to create sanctuary in the city and not just, you know, in our building.
Leading this call and response is a member of Northwest Philly No Ice, a group of residents in Northwest Philly that formed a rapid response system against ice activity in the region. In a social climate that inundates us with more horror stories than hopeful ones, finding local organizations and pockets of neighbors engaging in civics is more important now than ever before. If you'd like to learn more about the new Sanctuary Movement of Philadelphia, you can visit their website at sanctuaryphiladelphia.org. And if you'd like to dig deeper into the Germantown Mennonite Church, you can visit their website at germantownmennonite.org. A special thanks to the Germantown Mennonite House, Jay Bergen, Miles Orion of Germantown Espresso Bar, who was the host for the night, and a special thank you to the contributing talent, Morris Jones, Anthony Crispin, and Taylor.
At this time of year, many people make donations to their favorite causes. But that's not the only way to have an impact. My co-host, Vanessa Lowe, brings us this story about a group she's part of, which brings women in the region together to learn how to better use their savings and investment dollars to support the causes and communities they care about.
Invest for Better is a national organization that convenes circles where women learn how to align their money with their values. A group of Philadelphia alumni of the program established the first regional hub here, creating in-person opportunities for learning, building community, and exploring local investment opportunities. During the 6 sessions, women learn to identify their values and then learn about opportunities in each asset class for shifting funds to be more in alignment with those values. I talked with 3 women about their circle experience, the impact, and why they volunteered to be circle leaders. Shaquila led a 6-session Philly circle this fall. She says she was drawn to the idea as soon as she heard about the learning opportunity.
I can't remember where I got the link from, and I saw that it was women-focused investment group. I just started working for a financial company, and the idea of combining investing with sustainable goals and values really resonated with me. I'm big on being sustainable in everything that I do. And also, I figured if I couldn't get anything else out of it, it was a great way to meet women in my age group, like-minded in Philly, which is always nice. The biggest move I made was moving my money out of target date funds, which are the funds that a lot of us are just defaulted into by our retirement fund. So I moved all of my money out of target date funds into the most sustainable funds I could find within my plan and within my risk level, and also trying to keep it a little diverse, you know, so all of my funds don't score A's and B's. I do have a few C's in there on the sustainability scale, just so that I'm diverse in what my funds are invested in. But I have moved everything from those target date funds, which tend to be very safe, very old industries, but also not industries that serve my sustainability goals.
Shaquila was so inspired by her experience as a participant in Invest for Better, she decided she'd like to take a lead role in an investment circle this past fall.
I wanted to be a leader in part to pay it forward, in part because I believe that visibility matters. So me as a Black Muslim Philadelphia woman, seeing me on the page, I know draws in more women of all colors, right, who may feel underrepresented. And so partly to give back, but then partly to bring in more women that look like me and let them know that, you know, you are an investor and there's nothing wrong with taking your investment seriously, taking your retirement seriously.
Participants in the investment circle Shaquila led this fall come from a wide range of backgrounds. Mary has worked as an attorney for the city of Philadelphia for 6 years. In the fall sessions covering equity investments and fund analysis inspired her to finally start investing in her employer retirement plan.
Joining the cohort helped me break down some of the things about, like, where's your money being held, or how much is your net worth, and how do you start small with investing? So it's very much the, like, ABCs, just like on a personal level. If I wanted to do more sustainable investings, like how that would actually happen. And it was also interesting to hear from people who are, like, in all different stages of life. And it kind of feels like, okay, like, it's never really too late. And it's also definitely not too early to start thinking about this stuff. And I think for me as a single woman, like, I don't have anyone else, like, looking out for this stuff. I have to do it for myself. So I think it was empowering, and it was good to meet other women who are, like, in similar boats. So overall, I really enjoyed it.
Mary says since joining Invest for Better and connecting with other women, she's been more confident about making financial decisions. For example, it helped her finally decide to invest in the city's deferred compensation retirement plan.
You know, the city has the deferred comp, and I had not joined it because I didn't know what it was. And I felt like I needed all the information in the world before I could finally make a decision. And that was, like, a big deal for me to, like, make that leap.
Maria Elena was also in that fall circle and was so inspired that she agreed to co-lead the next Philly Invest for Better circle that starts in February 2026.
I found out about Invest for Better through another group called Women Investing for Sustainable Economies and got connected, was super interested and pumped about the program and joined a circle, and I just wrapped it up.
Tell us about your circle. What were some of the highlights?
I think the main highlight was the group of people. It was this intergenerational group of really amazing women, and we all had something to learn from each other. There were people who were just starting out thinking about money. There were people who were getting divorced and thinking about money, people who were nearing retirement, people who grew up with a lot of money, people who didn't grow up with a lot of money. And we just had a great opportunity to learn from each other. And I, 2 years ago now, almost graduated from business school. And part of the reason why I went to business school was to, like, demystify all this stuff for my friends, my family. And so this felt like an extension of that. Like, how do we continue to demystify the finance? Because ultimately, it's not that deep. The hard work comes with the impact. The finance side of things, you can learn very quickly and very easily, but it's the most intimidating.
You can learn more about the Philly Invest for Better Network at investforbetter.org/Philly.
The Vine Street Expressway has cut through Philadelphia's Chinatown neighborhood since construction of the highway began in the 1960s. Nearly six decades later, the city has embarked on a project called the Chinatown Stitch, which would cover several blocks of the highway to help repair the wound, making Chinatown a more walkable community. But despite making progress in recent years, the future of the project is uncertain. Block by Block reporter Angie Baca brings us this story.
Chinatown has faced a lot of challenges in recent years, but John Chin from the Philadelphia Chinatown Development Corporation says that it's a community that has come together to fend off threats.
Whether it's casino, the Phillies Baseball Stadium 2000, the most recent 76ers arena, right? And these projects just don't fit in this neighborhood. A minority community who typically is the brunt of urban renewal projects that other neighborhoods don't want, that we get proposed for.
But the community is still working to overcome what happened when the Vine Street Expressway was built, dividing the neighborhood in two, displacing people from homes, and making it dangerous to even cross the street. Chin says that a woman was recently hit by a car while crossing in September. Bicyclists have been hit. and the memory of several children being hit while crossing to get to school 2 decades ago is still fresh in his mind. PCDC was founded in the 1960s in response to the city's plans to build the expressway, as a way to give community members more of a voice in what kind of development happens in the neighborhood. While Chinatown leaders weren't able to deter the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation from building the highway, they have had a lot of success in recent years, and PCDC has been helping lead the way in development of the Chinatown Stitch project, which would cap several blocks of the Vine Street Expressway to make it easy to walk from one part of the neighborhood to another again.
We never gave up hope that we could have something better for our community instead of just a 13-lane highway that can cut through us.
The Chinatown Stitch is a project to redesign Vine Street once again, but this time with the hope of correcting some of the damage wrought by the original construction. The Stitch will consist of a highway cap, or park, over the I-676 expressway between 10th and 13th Streets. The cap aims to reconnect what Chinatown leaders call Chinatown North and Chinatown Core, add some welcome green space, and ultimately make the road a safer, more approachable corridor after 50 years of struggle.
It's going to convert this visual, physical, and mental barrier in people's minds.
The project has been in the works for years. The original idea was conceived back in 2004. But only after a series of grants over the past 10 years has the idea truly begun to take shape. In 2023, the city was awarded a grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Reconnecting Communities pilot program to actually launch the design of the cap. Community members started dreaming about the new parks, green space, flowers, and exercise spaces for seniors. But 1 year later, an even more exciting grant came.
March 2024, we heard the announcement that $158 million construction dollars were coming for the Chinatown Stitch project. That was probably one of the most joyous days in my life.
Oh, that was a dream come true. That always seemed to be, well, wouldn't that be nice kind of a thing. And suddenly it was a reality. Suddenly people were talking about it, and it was exciting.
That's Father Thomas Betts, a priest at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church and School, which has been an anchor in the neighborhood. Holy Redeemer has been separated from Chinatown Core by the expressway for 30 years. The Stitch could reconnect the core to the church, to the Crane Community Center where PCDC is housed, and eventually to the rail park just a bit north. Suddenly, Chinatown had funding to not only design the Stitch, but now to fully construct it, which is rare for transportation projects. Most of the time, funding is cobbled together from several different sources, and each phase of the project is funded at different times.
Fast forward to January 2025, right? That money was pulled away.
The Chinatown Stitch was one of many projects to lose funding under the Trump administration this year. Chin says that the community was angry and dejected.
I personally was devastated. And we got comments back in the spring of, what's the point? What's the use? The money is gone.
Betts says he was also discouraged, but he says the community is not one to stay down for long, as history tells him.
Most of the time when you cut a neighborhood in two like that, you wreck the neighborhood. But Chinatown's a pretty determined neighborhood, and it didn't wreck our neighborhood. We managed to overcome it, but to really redress that historic wrong would be quite a wonderful thing for Chinatown.
Chinatown leaders decided to move forward with finishing designing the Stitch. Community engagement dipped for a bit, but Chin says that participation is back on the rise. A survey conducted in November garnered over 500 responses, a quarter of which were in Chinese language. Designs right now consist of new public seating for people to rest, water features, a moon gate arch, gardens, a promenade, bike lanes, and restricting Vine Street down to two lanes in each direction. There is even talk of a pedestrian bridge at 9th Street, contingent on funding.
I felt the same way that people did. But I also felt that we need to do something about this. We need to lift people's spirits up. We need to really rally them emotionally and mentally and make sure that they get behind the rest of the work that needs to be done.
Chin says they're going to find the funding just like they always have before this one big grant came along, by piecing together as many sources as they can.
Design funding is still there. So we're going to complete the design. Trust us, we're going to go find funding. We're going to lift every rock up, turn over every rock, and we're going to go find funding.
And although funding is unsure, the importance of the project remains.
The Chinatown Stitch, I think, is the ultimate redesign that will be the project that's going to reconnect our community that's been divided all these years.
Many of us make decisions throughout our lives about how we want to live sustainably. But what about dying sustainably? What environmental impact will you have when you're laid to rest? Block by Block reporter Campbell Simmons brings us this story about a local cemetery that offers green burial options.
In the crook of the Schuylkill River in Bala Cynwyd, the western part of Laurel Hill Cemetery sits covering 200 acres of rolling hills. The majority of the non-denominational cemetery is covered in headstones and mausoleums, but a few sections have no headstones or any markers at all to indicate where a specific body is buried. Instead, these sections are covered in greenery and bordered by short walls covered with names and dates. These sections are where Laurel Hill does green burials, which are designed to be more environmentally friendly than traditional burial methods. I visited the cemetery to find out more.
What is a green burial?
Well, very simply, it's a form of burial that doesn't use chemicals or concrete. It is a more environmentally sustainable form of burial.
Laurel Hill CEO Nancy Goldberg says while green burials have been getting more attention in recent years, they've actually been around for a long time.
Green burial has been going on for centuries and centuries and centuries, particularly amongst those of the Jewish and Muslim beliefs.
Laurel Hill's Director of Cemetery Sales and Family Services, Thomas Cavanaugh, explained why people often opt into green burials.
The majority of folks that opt into green burial are folks who have been green their entire lives. They've been very conscious of the environment, the carbon footprint, and they want to do the same with their deaths. Some folks love the simplicity and the intimacy of a green burial. Not all, but many of our families who have burials in any one of our three green sections or purchase property in advance of needing it, a lot of them come from a Jewish background, a Muslim background, because the process for a green burial is very much in line with their own religious faith traditions.
The Green Burial Council is an education and certification organization dedicated to creating a unified standard for green burial practices across the country. For the Green Burial Council, a green burial means unaltered human remains are allowed to return to the earth with no interference of the natural decomposition process. This means no toxic embalming, no burial vaults, no reduction of remains, and the use of only sustainable and biodegradable containers. They also work to help cemeteries actualize low carbon footprints, conservation initiatives, and protection of worker health. Laurel Hill has been certified by the Green Burial Council as a hybrid cemetery. Their green burial sections are recognized as some of the highest standards of green burial, foregoing headstones and planting exclusively native plants on the grounds. Nancy broke down the different green burial sections at Laurel Hill.
They're each a little different. One is a successional forest, so it's a native meadow that will succeed over time into a forested area. We have another Bala Green, which is a meadow of native wildflowers and will remain so. And our third is Valley View Green, and that is more sedges and natural grasses interspersed with wildflowers.
The successional forest area, known as Nature's Sanctuary, maintains the highest standard of minimal environmental impact of the three sites. To keep emissions down, no power tools are permitted on Nature's Sanctuary, so all the graves are dug by hand, as opposed to machine dug. A tradition in the Jewish faith is to leave a stone on the tombstone of a past loved one to indicate that that grave has been visited and to symbolize the weight of the loss. In the Nature's Sanctuary section, stones are placed on top names all along the shared granite wall. But notably, the tradition has caught on. People of different religious backgrounds, not just Jewish, have left stones, seashells, and other small mementos all along the wall, some painted or decorated with deceased loved ones' names.
The sections themselves almost have a real kind of a communal feel to them. We have people who purchase in one of our green sections who, during life, were a little bit more well off than others, and we have folks not so much. And it has this kind of a feel to it where, you know, we're all the same. Like, we all end up the same.
In general, green burials end up costing about the same as traditional burials. But in recent years, green burial has become more and more popular, with over half the recent inquiries at Laurel Hill being for green burials. However, Laurel Hill is also clear that they don't actually encourage green burial over any other kind. Thomas explained that as a non-denominational cemetery, Laurel Hill embraces the opportunity to adjust to different people's needs.
We have a section of the cemetery that is for our Orthodox Jewish community. Those burials have to happen in 24 hours. Like, you'll get a phone call on Saturday night, and they have to be buried the next day. All the way to the other end of the spectrum, where we serve a very large Sikh community in the Philadelphia area, and they have family members that travel from India to be here for a funeral, and that person will be in our care for a week or more, and everything in between.
Nancy explained that at the end of the day, it's about autonomy and giving people the options that work best for them. This can be complicated since some methods of burial and cremation aren't legal in Pennsylvania yet, like human composting or alkaline hydrolysis, also known as water-based cremation.
There is interest, great interest, at the state legislative bodies right now, and hopefully those methods will be passed very soon, but other states offer them. And if we can't offer something like alkaline hydrolysis, I know we have sent that body to a state that does offer it, because that's what that person wanted. It is their decision, their body, their disposition, their beliefs.
If you'd like to learn more about Laurel Hill, you can visit laurelhillphl.com. This is Campbell Simmons, signing off.
Block by Block is produced by Angie Baccia, Ivan Felder III, Kalisa Hamid, Helen Horseman Allen, Amanda Johnson, Kennedy Scurry, Winter Schneider, Campbell Simmons, and us,
Samantha Roll,
and Vanessa Lowe. Kennedy Scurry is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Pete Alou is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager.
This is the last episode of Block by Block for this season, but we'll be back in the spring with new episodes featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can tune into WPPM on the third Sunday of each month for Around the Block to hear live interviews and more stories from Philly Cam's community radio news team.
You can also find past episodes of the show on Philly Cam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.